So what a tremendous demoniacal figure. Huh? What sort of feeling, what sort of image does this conjure up? Huh? It's this sort of thing that Padmasambhava was up against. Huh? It's in a way this sort of thing that we're up against. Huh? Because this great figure, Matarangara, is lurking in the depths of our own mind. Huh? In fact, lurking in the depths of all our minds, lurking in the depths of the collective unconscious, lurking in the world, lurking in mundane existence, in fact, in a sense, is mundane existence. In a sense, doesn't even lurk. Later on in the story, this great Rudra, this great fierce one, that is to say, Tarpa Nakwa, black salvation, is subdued by a sort of, if you like, incarnation of Padmasambhava in a very strange and dramatic way. We're not going into that now, we're not going into that this evening. But subdued he was, and transformed into a protector of the Dharma, even he. So from these sort of figures, these strange figures of the gods and demons, the Dakinis, this sort of cosmic figure, the black salvation, we can get some idea of the work, some idea of the task of Padmasambhava, some idea of the task of the Guru, what the Guru has to transform, and what in a sense we too have to transform. When I was reading that passage about Matarangara, I was reminded of a few similar figures in our own tradition in the West, perhaps not quite so extraordinary or dramatic or powerful, but nonetheless of much the same kind, which spell out much the same kind of meaning, much the same kind of message. How many of you, I wonder, have heard of Urizen? Urizen, students of Blake, yes. Who is Urizen? He's much the same sort of figure as this Matarangara, from a somewhat different point of view. Urizen, it's your reason, according to some commentators. Urizen, originally the Prince of Light, originally the illumined intelligence, so to speak, fell. He falls into duality. He limits himself, he contracts, and he starts seeing the world in a very narrow, limited sort of way, just with his reason and just through his senses. So he confines himself, he constricts himself, and he sort of explores simply this constricted, confined existence, being all the time in the dark, and he tries to bring everything under his own control. This is his great feature. Tries to bring everything under rational control. He prescribes laws. He's also the sort of God of the Old Testament. He tries to bind everything, hold everything down, limit everything, constrict everything. He doesn't want anything to be free. He doesn't want anything to be spontaneous. He wants to have it all bound down. He wants to have it all sort of reduced to order, which is actually disorder. Because the disorder which he wants to reduce to order is in fact not disorder at all. It's just richness and creativity. But so this is your reason, the limiting reason, seeing the whole universe just in terms of the five physical senses and the rational mind. So he's much the same sort of horrific figure as this Matarangara of the life and liberation of Padmasambhava. Another figure that I also think of is one that came to my mind a bit recently, and I'm sure this will be much more familiar to at least some of you than your reason, and that is the figure of Sauron. In the Lord of the Rings. I mean, some of you might have been to see that film of the Lord of the Rings, or of the first part of it rather, and there in the film, as in the book, the figure of Sauron appears. So who or what is Sauron? Is this sort of almost cosmic principle of evil that is just trying to destroy everything good, trying to gain power, trying to gather power to himself. He's the sort of ego personified. He's the sort of cosmic ego, if you like. He's destructive, he's negative, he's death, he's poison. But he's trying to bring everything under his control with the help of the One Ring, which of course he doesn't get. But anyway, that's another story. No, it's don't need to be reminded of it. But you see the sort of thing, you see the sort of figure, you see the sort of feeling. There are other analogues in Western tradition, but I'm not going into them this evening. So you can see what it is, Padmasambhava, what it is the Guru, or the Buddha as Guru, is up against. It isn't enough to sort of skim the sort of spiritual surface of these things and ignore them. Because the flames, as it were, are licking at your heels, and you have to do something about them. You can't just sort of soar above them. You've got to descend into the flames, as Blake would have said, and you've got to transform them. You've got to walk in the flames and delight in the flames. Enjoy the flames, and use the flames. Not run away to them into some vague, ambiguous sort of light. Cool and all that sort of thing. So we see... We see in the life and liberation of Padmasambhava, and reflected also in Western tradition, quite often we see these vast primordial archetypal figures and forces as something to be transformed and transfigured, not something to be disowned, something to be brought within the sphere, so to speak, of the spiritual life. And this is what Guru represents. This is what Padmasambhava represents. And again, this is why we're celebrating Padmasambhava Day this evening, or today in fact.